Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, Father's Day. But perhaps not for the reasons you might initially think. Although there are certainly concerns here about anything that perpetuates the binary prejudice of artificially carving the biological world into male and female categories, that's not the issue. And although Father's Day does make some trans persons uncomfortable because, as we all know, mothers can be fathers too, that's not the issue. And yes, although celebrating fathers certainly is a cultural macroaggression against those fine and noble persons who either choose childlessness or else find themselves unwillingly childless, that is still not the issue. No, the real problem with Father's Day is the blatantly unhealthy and audacious way it implies that fathers are good, useful, or necessary. We know that the only good, useful, or necessary parent is the mother, and yet mothers also receive just a single day of honor? The exact same amount of celebratory time in the holiday calendar? Preposterous! As the Feminist Catechism of Persephone the Supple, Volume 4, clearly teaches, women are good, men are worthless. They are only useful for one thing, and not all that useful at it, even so. Thus, in an effort to undo the error of the ages that men, boys, fathers, uncles, and brothers have value at all, let alone value that approaches that of their female superiors, let us simply delete Father's Day from the holy liturgical calendar of gender fluidity. Whoa! Unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Work on earth is done.
Second, the term master, in nearly all of its uses, but most importantly, in the context of the master bedroom of a house. Now look, you're a smart congregation, and surely I don't need to belabor the obvious way in which this inherently microaggressing terminology continually reminds us of the plantation, on which the master occupied the largest room in the big house from which he ruled over his enslaved Negroes. If we're going to continue calling it the master bedroom, we might as well start calling them slave bedrooms 1, 2, and 3. It's thus quite refreshing to see how many modern realtors and architects are abandoning the master label in favor of calling it the primary bedroom. Although we still find this nomenclature offensive due to the underlying privilege of thinking that one resident deserves so much more space than any other equally human person. That kind of inequity should not be tolerated by we the people of the holy enlightened terminology. All hail the inoffensive word. Master bedroom, however, is not the only offender. Consider computers with the unbelievably anti-woke terms master device and slave device. Need I say more? But then there's the master's degree, which some might say only addresses the mastery of a body of knowledge, but why should we consider information the sort of thing which people should rule over, dominate, and control like a master? Master Vintner? Master Craftsman? Forgotten Master? Master Recording? Master Key? Master Bruce? The Master of Ceremonies? The Maitre d'? The Maestro of the Orchestra? Where does the oppression end? The only way to stop this madness is to ban in its entirety the use of the M word from our vocabulary. Only then can we know we are properly purging ourselves of the racism we must transcend as a collective. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Go to hell on a shell.
And finally, the word spaz. Yes, this week brought us one giant word step closer to our noble end goal of a fully enlightened vocabular vana, in which the only language we use is pure, true, and kind, when that priestess of higher learning, Lizzo, led the way in eradicating this horribly ableist term from her song lyrics. The problem in this case is that the term spaz is rather innocuous in the United States, just meaning someone who's freaking out or prone to overreaction. However, in the United Kingdom, the word is a slur against people with cerebral palsy, and therefore, global superstar and morality influencer Lizzo should have known better than to use it. You see, as our fraternal order of language police teach us, if something you say offends anyone, even just one person, including imaginary or hypothetical persons, that's enough to discard it. And in this case, there was not one imaginary, but as many as four actual people in the United Kingdom who took offense at Lizzo's carelessly ableist use of this slur in her recent song, Girls. Fortunately, for the sake of Lizzo, her fans, and the legacy of her global activism for literacy and modesty, she immediately apologized and adopted a substitute term that did not marginalize persons of alternate capabilities. This should be a lesson to us all. We must maintain continual vigilance against the lazy habit of simply using words because no one has ever objected to them before. And when someone exposes our words as being hurtful, mean, or guilty of any of the unholy isms, we must be willing to immediately course correct toward better terminology. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.